Sony's getting their VR on PC. The cell phones went down in America yesterday, and NVIDIA just destroyed everybody's expectations. AI and gamers. Let's get into the hot news, everybody. I'm your Brett host. We're going to be going over the hottest tech news I can find on the internet while you enjoy your breakfast this Friday, February 23rd, 2024. We're going to start off today talking about some big news that Sony tried to fly under the radar with a little bit PlayStation update that they gave on their PSVR 2. And it turns out that one of the things that they are developing that they expect to come out later this year is getting PC support for the PSVR 2, which is something that a lot of people wanted because the headset on the PSVR 2 is incredibly good. It's not quite as high pixel density as the Apple Vision Pro, but it is significantly better than the Meta Quest 3. So it sits in that nice middle ground for a price that's not that unreasonable. The problem is that Sony has only released 3 games for this since it came out, and there's not that many third-party titles that are out for it as well, and all regular PSVR 1 games aren't back, like it's not forwards compatible either, like they had to be remade for it, and there hasn't been a whole lot that's been done on that front. So the reasons to buy a PSVR 2 are essentially non-existent unless you want to play Resident Evil VR, Horizon, Call of the Mountain VR, and you like those burn your pockets so deeply that you need to spend the $500-$600 to get the PSVR 2. But now it does look like this is going to be coming out later this year. However, even though a lot of people are trying to speculate what does this mean, there is a developer that I happen to follow over on Twitter known as IVRYVR who's been working on an implementation of reverse engineering the PSVR 2 to get it to work natively on the PC. And what they're suspecting is that this is going to be like a Steam Link, Oculus Link situation where it's going to have to stream over the network to put it onto the PS5 into the PSVR 2. So you're not going to be playing it natively. It's not going to be as good as you think, but it will still be something that's more than nothing, but does not undermine the work that they have been doing to try to get a physical hardware solution. So we'll wait and see, but this is a big deal. This is something that Sony needs to keep PSVR 2 alive because their headset is really good. It just has no use case. But what does have a use case is today's video sponsor, which is Our Coffee. I want to thank everybody for the amazing reception that we had to launching the pre-orders for our Rare Brew coffee yesterday. This is something that we've been working on for well over a year, trying to find the right coffee supplier, trying to find all of the ways to do this properly to make sure that we have a sustainable business, not just for us, but for the people who are actually farming the beans, but then also where the money's gonna go with SynGap Research Fund. So getting all of that worked out behind the scenes took us a long time, and that's why Rare Brew is so near and dear to our hearts and something that we're gonna be moving forward with. So if you wanna check out our Advocate Blend, which is our medium roast, it's sourced from both Brazil and Ethiopia, being a blend of two different countries, just like our family kind of is. One of our sons was born in South Africa. We're from America. We're blending that together. Our rare disease story is very much tied up into all of this. The coffee tastes dang delicious, and you can pre-order it right now for our official launch on Rare Disease Day on February 29, 2024. If you use the code UFD10, you can save 10% off of your first purchase with free shipping on orders over $50. I love this coffee. This has been a journey for us, not just on the rare disease side of things, but also getting an entirely new company built on the back end has been a great journey for our family, and I appreciate, again, all of the support. And if you want to pick up some of the coffee, you can do so down below at the link in the video description, or go to rarebrewcoffee.com. And again, you can use code UFDTECH to save 10%. And Google is saving their bacon when it comes to making sure that you can actually find searches and do all the things that you do on Google search. You might have noticed that Google's been slipping a little bit lately. You have to add Reddit as a suffix to find any sort of like forum posts that you need an answer to. And that's why it's been found out that the $60 million a year that Reddit's getting to scrape their data for AI training, Google's paying that. They're actually going to be paying their way to get Reddit's data as part of their training models. And that's going to be one of the ways Google saves its search business. And they said that this will provide Google with an efficient and structured way to access the vast corpus of existing content on Reddit, which makes a lot of sense. This is actually a pretty harmonious relationship, like, despite the Reddit versus Redditor debate and, like, user versus platform debate, the platform-to-platform situation where if anybody was going to scrape Reddit data, they should be compensated for that, and then Reddit should find a way to compensate the Redditors, but then also, like, it making it so that it supplements the world's largest search engine. That seems like a wise move, and that's just part of Google's strategy, to pay to be the number one search platform. They pay to be the number one on Samsung. They pay to be the number one on iPhone devices. It's just, it's the way they do things, and now they're looking to pay in the AI generation. And unfortunately, the payment that you sent to your cell phone company was a little useless yesterday if you're in the US, because AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile all experienced nationwide outages. Now, this affected each of the carriers in different magnitudes. AT&T was the most, with the largest portion of people who had outages, and this also led to people also not being able to reach emergency services by being able to dial 911, which is a huge problem. AT&T confirmed that 70,000 customers had this issue as of 8 a.m. yesterday. T-Mobile and Verizon was in the few thousand region, but this did seem to be pretty widespread, and there's no information currently as of the time of filming as to why this happened. Was this a cyber attack? Was this just network infrastructure? Was this just a hiccup in a code? Some back-end thing that wasn't supposed to be pushed to the main fork? Who knows? We'll likely find out as investigations happen, things play out, and we get more details as things are moving forward. Let me know if you were affected by this in any meaningful way. This does, like, bring up the idea of, like, should we bring back landlines? Should people have a home phone just in case? Again, is that a thing that should be considered? I don't know. Should we all go back to cable and landlines and non-algorithmically generated content, and it's only based on the subscription feed? We're going back to the mid-2000s, y'all. And I wish I could go back to Reese for deals right now, but he's busy traveling the coast of South Africa because he finally got his driver's license back. That was a whole story where the only printing machine for driver's licenses in South Africa broke, so they had to send it back to Germany for repair, and it was gone for 6 months. Anyways, I'm gonna bring you a deal, and that is Framework is selling their Framework 13B stock for less than $500 right now. They have a blog post talking about how the Framework Laptop 16s are starting to ship. I should be charged for mine any day now, and they have a new sub $500 model on some of their B stock units, which includes an 11th gen Intel Core i7 with Iris Xe graphics. It's a 13-inch machine. However, it does not come with RAM, storage, Wi-Fi, power adapter, or operating systems. So you do have to build a lot of it into that. Some of these aren't very expensive, like RAM and storage. You can source those yourself. Wi-Fi connectivity and power adapter are not things that you typically just pop down to your Best Buy to pick up, but it does. This is a pretty good deal in case you're looking to get a very modular, replaceable, upgradable version of a laptop that you can carry around for a long time. And Intel's hoping to stick around for a long time, which is why they're announcing that they've worked with Microsoft to produce some Microsoft chips. That's going to be happening thanks to Intel's Foundry services, and these chips are expected to be delivered sometime next year in 2025. It's going to be using Intel's 18A infrastructure, or 1.8 nanometers. This is coming off the backs of us talking earlier in the week on Hot News that Microsoft is looking to get away from Nvidia when it comes to their networking infrastructure because they don't want to have that all in their data centers. It's not quite clear if that's what Microsoft and Intel are partnering on. They did not disclose what type of chips these are going to be. However, this does seem to be a move that Microsoft has been making to get away from Nvidia because they don't want to be under the umbrella of this gigantic conglomerate, super amazing company, which Intel also used this opportunity to talk about the fact that they are open for business with their IFS to AMD, Nvidia, Qualcomm, you name it. If you want to be using our IFS, we got some leading technologies here. You can do that. But let's go ahead and spend the rest of this episode of Hot News closing out talking about Nvidia, because my goodness, what a monster company this is, just absolutely destroying expectations. They had their Q4 earnings reports, and it just blew every expectation for what Nvidia could possibly do out of the water, both in the data center AI side as well as the gaming side. But we got more to talk about for gamers after we talk about the earnings report. So they are up 265% year on year in revenue, 22% quarter on quarter. Their net income was up 769% year on year. Operating income was up 983%, and their expenses only up 23%. So they made an obscene amount of money in 2023. Q4 was a monster quarter for them, $22 billion in total revenue, up from the $18 billion in Q3, which the previous Q4 was only $6 billion. Data center was up 27% in a single quarter and 409% in a single year. Absolutely ridiculous numbers, obviously growing on the backs of AI and all of the GPUs that NVIDIA is shipping out for these large language models, companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, etc., trying to use their GPUs to bolster their neural networks. But gaming also seeing an uptick, 56% increase from a year ago, flat from the previous quarter, but still doing better than 2023. Now, some of this could be due to the fact that more AI people are buying gaming GPUs because it's too cost prohibitive or too difficult to get their hands on the data center versions. However, I'm not necessarily noticing as much stock issues with the gaming GPUs as we saw when it came to crypto mining, when NVIDIA was reporting that their gaming numbers were through the moon and it really was that they were just selling to crypto miners. That doesn't seem to be happening so much here. There still seems to be a lot of retail stock, but let me know if you've had a hard time getting your hands on a GPU that you've been looking to grab specifically in the last few months or so. But on the news of all of this, NVIDIA stock, which has been on a tear for the last few months. 6 months ago, it was at $471. As of close yesterday, it was at $785. That's up 66% in 6 months and up 16.4% in a singular day because of this earnings report. All of those earnings exceeded expectations. NVIDIA is stronger than people were even expecting that they could be on the backs of all of this AI stuff that's going on. And to put it into perspective, the market cap gain on that 16% increase, which $600 for a single share of NVIDIA was already a large amount. To go up to $760 in one day was just mind-blowing. They gained an almost entire market cap of AMD in a singular day. Now, NVIDIA did talk about the next generation of GPUs, Blackwell and all everything that's going to be coming with that. They do expect that they're not going to be able to meet all of the demand that everybody has because TSMC likely can't make the GPUs fast enough. It's not going to be happening. So temper your expectations for how much money NVIDIA is going to be making in the future. But not to be content with blowing everybody's mind with AI and everything that's happening there, NVIDIA dropped a bombshell when it came to gamers and what you can expect if you install the latest drivers. NVIDIA, for the first time in over a decade, is updating their control panel to make it look like it's not freaking out of Windows XP. This is a large deal. They're finally revamping how it works and giving it a brand new look and experience and fusing it with GeForce Experience. But I know a lot of people are groaning right now. A lot of people don't like GeForce Experience, but I'm going to touch on why it's not as bad as you think it is. So this new control panel will allow you to configure all of the things that you would expect. Change all of the settings that you would want, have per game configurations. This is a very robust control panel. It does so much. It looks fresh. It looks like the rest of their software. It looks like GeForce Experience. It looks like GeForce Now. It actually functions like a bit of modern software and not like the same exact piece of technology that I got in 2007 when I picked up my XFX 8600 GT. So this is good on NVIDIA, but the big news is that it doesn't require mandatory login. That was the reason people hated GeForce Experience, why they wouldn't download it. GeForce Experience would let you know if there was a new driver out there, but in order to use it, you had to log in. Now with the new unified experience, you don't have to log in anymore and you get all of those perks. You'll get notified if there's a new latest driver for your PC and NVIDIA can collect your telemetry data. It's just not tied to an account anymore. They also updated a few other things like ShadowPlay can now capture games at 120 FPS. And they also brought out RTX HDR, which uses AI to bring HDR to SDR games to make all of your games look better if you happen to run on an HDR monitor. This is a big deal from NVIDIA, giving you free bits of software that, at least still show they care about gamers in the most roundabout way. Like, they're making obscene amounts of wealth, like multi-generational levels of wealth for their company, for their CEOs on the AI side. And then they're over here still dropping a few bones to gamers. I still question whether or not NVIDIA can continue to have all of these different things under the same hood. You know, maybe we will get a spinoff where GeForce becomes its own company at some point. because it's clear that they have completely different interests at heart. NVIDIA announced that they have their GTC keynotes that's going to be coming up in March, and it's all AI. It's just going to be an absurd amount of artificial intelligence neural network talk. It has all of the major players, all of the major companies, and gamers just get like a, hey, we gave you a blacked out supercard. There you go. Here it is. And I don't know. We'll see how long this can continue for. The gamers aren't dead to NVIDIA. It's not like it's an insignificant portion of their revenue. They still made $3 billion in a single quarter, $10.4 billion in a single year off of their gaming division. That's not nothing, but it is also kind of getting eclipsed by the fact that NVIDIA made that amount plus 80% in a single quarter with their AI, $48 billion in a single year. We'll have to see what that translates to for 2024. I don't expect that these numbers would go down unless the AI gold rush is over. We'll keep an eye on it, see how it shakes out, and keep you updated here on Hot News. Now let's talk about what you talked about yesterday for comment response. We got Z Lightning saying, Apple tends to get ahead of things was definitely a funny line. Yeah, I think in certain ways, Apple does do things differently than the rest of the market, and then people are looking to catch up. In other ways, they do tend to lag behind, but I've talked about this at length before in comment response, and people tend to call me an Apple shill at this point, but like when it comes to the Lightning connector, that came out in 2012. Anything that was comparable that was being put on an Android device did not ship until many years later. Or if you look at the original iPhone, like the competitors that were coming out from Microsoft, Android, Samsung coming out with competitors, Palm coming out with competitors, it took a while for the industry to catch up in specific ways. And then once we start getting into the nitty gritty of like, oh, who's bringing out 120 hertz refresh rate? Who's bringing out OLED? Yes, like other manufacturers do it first, but then Apple has to do it at a scale that nobody else is doing it. So that's why it takes a little bit longer than other companies. I think the reason why MetaQuest couldn't actually ship the resolution of display that Apple has in the Vision Pro is because they have the problem that Apple has with the iPhone. The MetaQuest ships at too high a volume and they want to keep it cost affordable so they can't introduce that. Whereas the Vision Pro can come out and be like, hey, we're introducing our own new product category segment over here for Apple. So let's take a risk, charge a lot, and then we'll figure out how do we scale this technology out to more people in the future. I get that they don't do that all of the time, but they also don't not do that. Apple does innovate. The AirPods, it is a great example. They came and they innovated in a way that they made Bluetooth earbuds seamless in a way that no other wireless Bluetooth earbud manufacturer was doing up until that point. The way it connected to your device seamlessly, the way that it had feature sets that just made sense, like the fact that if you took it out of your ear, it would pause what you were listening to. Very, very few, if any, earbud manufacturers had those features, and if they did, it was tied to an app that you had to use. It was a whole thing. That's why AirPods became so good in such a big industry. They're one of the largest companies in the world if you just look at AirPod sales. Now, all of the other companies have finally caught up to realize, oh, hey, this technology exists, we can finally make things that work. And then you have Apple doing stupid things like making the AirPods Max, which are significantly worse than something like the Sony XM4s or the XM5s and cost a lot more. There's still that weird balance where like Apple legitimized that industry and then tried to make a move, and then like Apple does stupid things, but I also can't get away from acknowledging that they have changed industries in the past for the better. This is not an anti-Apple channel, nor are we a pro-Apple channel. So I'm gonna say positives and negatives. And then we got Jack Linde saying, that's young Brett. When did you take that? Yesterday? Still the best teenage tech news host on the internet. My goodness. Okay. This is 2024 Brett, right? 33 years old. This is 2015 Brett. I am 25 years old right here. You're telling me you don't see the ragged rage of aging? You're telling me you don't see the weathering storm of life experiences on my face here? You don't see the extra, what I'm gonna guess, 60 pounds on my frame? I've been through a lot since 2015. I can tell I definitely look a little older still look young, whatever. Then we got Mega Manzer saying, I thought the Switch was released in 2017, not 2015. I had a couple cell phones with USB-C before I got the Switch in June 2017. You're right, I misquoted it. 2015 is what I said. 2017 is when the Switch came out. But that actually kind of further proves my point. The Lightning connector on the iPhone had been out since 2012. It was not 3 years until a ubiquitous USB-C device came out. It was 5 years. So, like, Apple innovated on the Lightning connector. The form factor was really good. The data transfer speeds, half a gigabit per second for 2012, that was pretty dang good. USB 2, not a bad dang speed back then. But they just kind of lagged behind over the years. And then that was my biggest problem with the switch to USB-C on the iPhone. Like, it's not like Apple has been releasing new connectors over and over again. They stuck with the standard that they released over a decade ago. One would just hope that they would update it so it's faster and can charge better. That's what we would want. But the fact that the Switch was released in 2017, not 2015, my COVID brain was forgetting, it just makes that worse. Most people did not get a USB-C device until 2017, 2018, 2019. And we got Z-Shrink saying, the coffee tastes so good, literally drinking it right now. Thanks, Brett. You're welcome, Z-Shrink. Thank you for the kind words about the coffee. We did ship out a few marketing samples to a lot of people over the last little bit for just to get everybody's opinions. They get this little cute coffee mug and a few other goodies. So getting our first feedback on the coffee, it seems like people are really excited about it, and we're very much excited about this new venture for us as well. VO saying, I'm very interested in buying your coffee and I hope that this company goes good. Thank you, we really appreciate it. And then Peter Ellis saying, Google's Gemma, to be or not to be? That in the question. Thank you, that was great. That was a nice little one to end it on. We'll see you back here on Monday for more of the hottest tech news. Speaking of COVID, friggin', I feel great now. I guess Tuesday filming was my worst. Tuesday into Wednesday was my hardest day. No, Wednesday into Thursday was my worst day. I filmed Monday for Tuesday's episode. Tuesday into Wednesday, that was my worst day. And it's just kind of been getting on the mend since then. I've had to take breaks. My energy levels are definitely not where they were, but it also doesn't seem like I had any difficulty breathing. I haven't had too many bad symptoms. It was not a nice sickness, but back when I had shingles in the middle of last year, that was way worse. I hated that way so much more. That was miserable. Okay, now I'm not going to keep you miserable by having you watch. We're done with hot news. Bye.